Hey everybody, and welcome to Toro Sports Talks. I'm your host, Peter Toro, and for today's episode I'm going to be focusing on the United States women's national team and the two friendlies that they played last week against Australia and Belgium, as well as focusing on Tobin Heath, who I believe is another candidate for Athlete of the Year. I'm also going to be talking about a topic of issue for today, and that's going to be the women's national team and the pay disparity and the pay gap between the men, and also what's coming up for their lawsuit, as well as a donation that they received from Luna Bars to offset the pay disparity for a bonus of making the World Cup team. So I'm going to be talking about all that and more on this episode today. So let's get started with Tobin Heath and Athlete of the Year. So Tobin Heath is a wing player for the United States Women's National Team. She is an attacking forward. She plays for Portland Thorns for the National Women's Soccer League. Last year, she was hindered with a bad knee injury that she was recovering from 2017. So she missed almost all of 2017 as well as the beginning of 2018. She returned in June and played in 19 matches for her club team, the Portland Thorns. And she scored 8 goals and 7 assists to lead the Thorns to the championship against North Carolina, where they lost. In 2018 for the national team, Tobin Heath also played in 10 games, starting in 6, and was substituted in for 4 games. She scored 7 goals and had 4 assists in total for last year. This year she also has scored 3 goals so far in 4 games. So the reason why I think Tobin Heath is a potential athlete of the year is because of her ability to come in the game and have an immediate impact on offense. Her ability with her speed and the footwork that she has, she just makes defenders look silly. She makes them miss. She breaks people's ankles. She's always had the ability to do a lot of things really well. One thing that she lacked in years past was her finishing ability in the final third. So she was always really good getting the ball and, you know, making defenders miss and making them look silly along the way, but she kind of suffered in scoring goals. And I think that's been the biggest change in her game, has been her ability to finish those balls and score goals. Lately, she's also been, I think the biggest thing also is playing with, big-time goal scorers like Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, and a great midfield that the United States women's team also has, being the best in the world. She has a lot of different options, but with her speed, it really opens up a lot of space in the middle of the field. So whether she is playing on the edge or if she kind of drifts towards midfield again, it's going to open up a lot of space for other players. And if she's able to get that play balls up top to Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, or Julie Ertz or Crystal Dunn, who are also big-time goal scorers for the U.S., that ability to do that really helps the team. And she's just going to go out and try different stuff that other people aren't going to go and try, and that really sets her apart from some of the other players. And I think that she's the most dynamic player on the field when she's on the field and healthy for this United States women's national team. She pretty much put the Portland Thorns on her back and drove them to the championship last year. Her ability to take over games is really remarkable. I think she showed that so far this year in the She Believes Cup against Brazil. She had one amazing goal where she was dropping back on defense, was able to steal the ball from a defender, and ran probably 40, 50 yards up the field, and then just scored a beautiful goal. So her pure speed and attacking presence that she brings up in the field really makes a huge difference for this United States women's national team, as well as her ability to get back on defense, and then by getting back on defense to start that fast break and giving balls back up top to other attackers. So for those reasons, I think Tobin Heath is one of the more dynamic players that this United States women's national team offers. They obviously have a lot of great talent on this team between veterans like Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, Carly Lloyd, Julie Ertz, and many more. but none of them really have that spark that Tobin Heath can bring to a team, and her ability on offense to really just take over and try new things and really open up the field and allow other players to get in good attacking positions and score goals. So for those reasons, I believe Tobin Heath has really put herself in a good spot to be Athlete of the Year for this coming year. Next up, I'm going to cover the friendlies that the United States played last week. They played against Australia and Belgium. They won both games. They beat Australia 5-3 and beat Belgium 6-0. In the Australian game, there were goals from Alex Morgan, and that was her career 100th goal for her. Alex Morgan becomes only the sixth player in United States women's soccer history to score 100 goals or more. That was on an assist from Crystal Dunn. Tobin Heath also scored a goal with an assist from Emily Sonnet, who's another defender. Megan Rapinoe scored, and Mallory Pugh scored two goals. The biggest thing that stood out to me in this game was the goals on offense were aplenty. They kept coming. That's going to happen with this United States women's national team. They're just that they're that good. They're going to put up a lot of goals. The thing that I think hurt in that game, they gave up three goals, is that as great as an offensive attacking team as they are, sometimes I think the defenders can get pulled up. So on their five goals that they scored, three of them were assisted from defenders, with Crystal Dunn and then Emily Sonnet had two assists, as well as an assist from goalkeeper Alyssa Nair, but that was in the last minute of the game, and Australia was stretched in trying to score another goal. So that one, I think, a little bit of an asterisk there. But the other goals were assisted on defenders, and I think as good as that is, having defenders helping out on offense, because it really makes you more dynamic and it's going to stretch the defense. When you lose the ball in the midfield or in the back third of your own field, it really leaves you susceptible to the other team scoring goals. And a team like Australia is good enough with players like Caitlin Ford and Sam Kerr, who's probably the best young goal scorer in the game right now for the women's side, that you're going to give up a lot of goals. And I think that showed, so that if I were a team that had to face the women's national team, I would say, we're just going to go up and press them, because their defenders are going to get sucked up and try to get offense. But if we put pressure on the defenders and can steal the ball from them, we're going to score just as many goals as they are. So I think that's something that manager and coach Jill Ellis is going to have to look at and take care of, because the back line is a little shaky. I don't know. Kelly O'Hara is a defender for the United States women's national team, but she's also been hurt. She's been in training camps so far this year, but also hasn't played. So I don't know. She's looking to try to play in the World Cup. We'll see. I think that's to be determined, also depending on her health. So that's something to look to. But the positives are great, because you got players in form scoring goals, which is always good, and it's always good to come by. But again, you know, the defense, I think, against good offensive scoring teams has to be sorted out. As for the Belgium game, they won 6-0. I think that kind of showed who they are, and it was kind of their B squad playing. Carly Lloyd, who's a little bit older, but she's kind of used as a super sub now. She scored two goals. Lindsay Horan, who's been coming off injury slowly, also scored a goal. Kristen Press had a couple assists in that game. Sam Mewis scored. Alex Morgan had another goal. And Jessica McDonald also scored for that game. They won 6-0. They dominated essentially from start to finish. Again, I think the problem showed a little bit with defense, in terms of having defenders come up and leaving you open to scoring opportunities in the back third. But I think against a team like Belgium, they were able to get away with some of those mistakes. I don't know if you play Australia in the World Cup if you're going to be able to get away with those same mistakes. I think that's something that could come back and end up biting the women's team. But I think also they're going in as the clear favorite after what they did in 2015. It's a much different team than it was in 2015, with a lot of familiar faces as well, but the roles have kind of changed since the last World Cup. But I think this team is obviously the favorite, and they're going to go in swinging in the World Cup come June. And it's going to be really exciting to watch this World Cup coming up. So it's going to be fun to watch. But this United States women's team is very exciting and the favorite to win the World Cup. And these friendlies were great examples with the offense of what you're going to get in June. So that's something to look forward to for sure. Coming up next, I'm going to talk about the lawsuits that are going in place for the women's national team, as well as Equal Pay Day and International Women's Day for the topic of the day coming up right now. Alrighty, so for the women's national team, they've been busy this year in this past month. International Women's Day in March, the women's national team filed lawsuit against U.S. Soccer for discrimination against pay and lack of resources. This isn't the first time that they've done this. In 2016, right after they won the World Cup in 2015, they also tried to sort out a new collective bargaining agreement with the U.S. soccer team because of lack of pay and lack of resources. So this isn't anything new. I think the biggest problem with this idea is that this comes from FIFA and from soccer, and the entire point of U.S. both of those institutions with U.S. soccer and FIFA is to grow the game. It's not really about money. And I understand that you have to be making money, but the women's national team makes more money than the men's national team does in terms of soccer in the United States, which I know isn't the case around the rest of the world, but the women are the peak. They are the gold standard for the game, and they deserve to get rewarded for that. In 2016, Carly Lloyd wrote an article that was featured in the New York Times, and she stated that each team is required to play 20 friendlies a year. The men are make an average of $406,000 a year, while the top five women are guaranteed only $72,000 a year. And again, this is because for the women's game, they are required to win their games, whereas the men, win or lose, they're getting paid regardless of the result. And the women have to play more games and win them just to stay on track for their pay, as well as the difference in World Cup bonuses. And this is where Luna Bars comes into play. When Luna Bars donated $718,750, which goes to about $31,000 per player that makes the women's roster. So for 23 players, they each are getting an additional $31,000 of pay as a bonus from Luna Bars to offset the disparity and the gap between what the men's team would make for getting a roster bonus for a World Cup team. So that's something really good, and that was announced on Equal Pay Day. So the women's national team PR is, they're really killing it right now. They're doing their job, and it's interesting to see how Luna Bars did that. And the reality is that as good as it is, the women's national team really shouldn't have to focus on sponsorships and corporations donating to be able to get paid as much as the men when the women are winning and they make more money through TV with the men. The past World Cup final was the most watched soccer event in U.S. history, with the Women's World Cup final in 2015 in Canada. That was the most watched soccer event in United States history. And it also generated $17.7 million in that year of profit for the U.S. Soccer Federation. So that's really interesting to see that difference. And again, I understand that that's not a worldwide thing, and that's not something that happens worldwide. A lot of places, soccer for women is looked down upon, and I believe it was in Afghanistan. They had to rip apart their soccer federation because the president was actually sexually abusing the players. So it's disgusting to see what's going on other places, but I think that's what makes the fight that the U.S. women's national team is doing even more prevalent, in the sense that they're the gold standard, and if they don't stand up for what's going on, then nobody will. In addition to the lawsuit and lack of resources and lack of pay, another interesting note is that The women get paid a difference in stipend also for their daily expenses. For the women, they get $60 a day, whereas the men get $75 a day. And Carly Lloyd has alluded to this with a quote saying, maybe they figure that women are smaller and thus eat less, and that's why they get paid less per day, which is just silly. And it's the same thing with appearances through U.S. soccer. The pay disparity is about $750, with women getting paid $3,000 and male soccer athletes $3,750. So I think the biggest thing that the women's team is trying to focus on is just the difference. I don't think it's all just about money. I think it's also about kind of the idea surrounding the women that they're lesser. And they're not. When you're as dominant as this women's national team has been, winning, all they do is win, really. They dominated the World Cup. They've been very solid this year, and they look to continue that dominance. And if the U.S. is as good as everyone wants it to be, just as a country and being ahead of the times, then this is something that they should take seriously in U.S. soccer and set the standard for paying the women what they deserve to get paid. And that starts with that lawsuit. And I don't think it's going to come to the point where, in the short term, nothing. I don't think a whole lot's going to happen with the World Cup coming up. The U.S. women's team isn't going to sit out the World Cup or anything like that. That's not going to happen. That hasn't been a strategy that they've employed. I don't think it's going to be a strategy that they take right now. I think the reason why you see this is because they have the most leverage on their side. This is when the most people are going to be watching. This is when people are talking about them regardless of them suing. With the World Cup coming up every 4 years, it gives them a spotlight to kind of make some noise. And it's great. They should. So hopefully the U.S. will win the World Cup and continue to make some noise on the lawsuit side as well as winning and playing. Another key point to keep in mind for the women's national team is that, and I make this argument all the time for women's sports in general, is that if the entire point of U.S. soccer and FIFA is to expand the sport of soccer for women and for soccer in general, then you have to pump money into that system for it to flourish. Having the games on more widespread platforms and having more accessibility to the games and watching the games and advertising is one way that soccer and women's sports in general, I think, need to catch on to. I think that goes for the WNBA, for women's soccer. I think tennis actually does a pretty good job with it, with Serena Williams. Again, I think Serena Williams is just one of those athletes that people can all look to and go to, and that the media is buzzing before she even steps on the court. But I think that you need that for all sports and all women's sports in general. Because what the women's soccer team is doing is truly amazing in the dominance that they've had over the last 4 years. And if they're going to continue that, they deserve to have the best platform to do that under. So I don't think it's fair to compare revenues, even though the revenue streaming for the U.S. soccer team, specifically the women, bring in more money than the men do. The men didn't even qualify for the World Cup. So they actually lost revenue last year compared to the women, who brought in over $17 million. For U.S. soccer, so that's something to look into. And the bigger that gap between the talent level becomes, and if the men continue to play poorly and the women continue to play well, I think that creates even a better case for the women to start this kind of revolution, hopefully, for women's soccer as well as women's sports in general, and being able to get paid what they deserve. So that's the topic for today, and I appreciate everybody listening to Toro Sports Talks. I'm your host, Peter Toro. Thank you again.